Welcome to another edition of Commentizers. I am your host, Chris Eaton, and joining me, as always, is my Kaiser compatriot.
That's the longest intro you've done in season 7. Where are we on now? Anyway, this is Adrian. Welcome. Good morning.
Yes. Oh, a rare morning. We're actually like awake and alert and with a strong internet connection for once. I found, since I've got here to Texas, Ari and I have done a couple of these and we've run into some issues, but I've been told usually when we're recording, because of the time difference, Ari's in California, I'm out here in Texas, I am usually recording at about midnight, 1 a.m. my time. So, and I was just told weeks ago, like, hey, we've been having some issues at night. Like, the cable people came out, and they're like, oh, yeah, you got, like, a weird drift going on. So, I'm like, oh, okay, explains a lot. A lot of frustrating nights, but not today. No, we are back. It's been a hot minute since we've done an episode. Mm-hmm. Especially reviewing. I was just coming back through the archives, just, you know, like, what was the last thing we reviewed? And it turns out nothing. It was the Japan episode where you and I sat and bivouacked about our trip nearly a year ago at this point.
Well, we did other stuff.
But we have done other stuff. You were just on our main show, the Kaiju Kingdom podcast. We were talking about Shin Godzilla, and I said, hey, we're reviewing Shin. There's another Shinji Higuchi joint out there that we have not reviewed yet. And that is what we are talking about today. Aryan, what are we talking about?
We're talking about the 2025 movie Bullet Train Explosion. Now, let's just get this out of the way. Mm-hmm. This is the sleeper hit for 2025.
1,000%.
This is going to be a positive review. We're going to be gushing about this movie. Mm-hmm. There's a lot to talk about, but also, I mean,
well, there's a lot to talk about, but not a lot to talk about. That's the beauty of this movie.
Yes. Like
that's the simplicity and wonder and magic of cinema and what Shinji Higuchi can do. Yes. So this is apropos because about 2.5 weeks ago, Shin Godzilla was re-released in theaters across the United States to a magnificent number. I think it quadrupled its initial U.S. run from like that little 2.5 weeks.
I haven't seen the final numbers, but it looks like it did way more this time than it originally did.
1,000%. And I part of it is that, you know, G-Kids is a bigger distributor, at least at this point, than Funimation was back in 2016. Mm-hmm. It also is the fact that, there was a little movie called Godzilla Minus One came out like 2 years ago that really got the world into Japanese Godzilla movies again. So, and it's August. Normally not the time of the year when there's a lot of offerings at the cinemas. So there was a lot of people kind of going like, is that a new Godzilla movie? No, it's not. It's nearly 10 years old. But for the first time ever, like, a lot of people got to see Shin Godzilla.
Crazy.
So, yeah. And it was kind of wild that weekend after you and I recorded, just perusing social media, seeing how many people for the first time had, one, seen Shin Godzilla on the big screen. It was a reminder when it came out, like, how niche, like, Godzilla still was and the works of Hideki Anno and Shinji Higuchi.
I love seeing people post their, like, ticket stubs or, now showing, pictures at the theater and, them bringing the little toys or whatever. I think that kind of excitement rubs off on people, and I hope that it continues on. And I hope that seeing how well this did as a re-release, hopefully we get something cool for Godzilla Day.
I'm hoping that too. I mean, this will be the first year in 2 years I'm actually excited for Godzilla Day. As we're talking, October 4th in LA, there will be a screening at Beyond Fest of the 4K restoration of one of my absolute favorite Godzilla movies, Godzilla Final Wars.
With does it kill you? Does it kill you that you're not going to be here for that?
Yeah, a little bit. A little bit. It does. You know, I knew that when I moved out here to Texas, I knew there would be certain things that I would be missing out on. It's a little disappointing, but it is what it is. I made my bed. I am sleeping in it. But, I mean, I was there at the premiere back in 2004. So I have seen it on the big screen. I saw it opening night, if you will. But I kind of want to see what this 4K looks like, because that DVD release that Sony put out kind of looks like muddled garbage.
Fingers crossed we get the 4K for Godzilla Day this year.
That's what I'm assuming they're probably going to do if they're debuting it here at Beyond Fest. That, like, okay, this is going to be the Godzilla Day showing, and it's probably the best one to do it, because, I mean, Final Wars, say what you will, it's kind of the Star Wars prequels of the later Godzilla movies. Like, there's Arian's rolling his eyes, but he knows what I'm talking about. The older generation does not like that movie, but I mean, when I was at G-Fest last year, they showed Final Wars. I was going to go to that screening. By the time I went to go get my tickets, completely sold out. And the view I saw from that screening was wild. And it was all kids. It was all like 20-something-year-olds, because that was their introduction. That's their Destroy All Monsters, if you will.
I thought you meant like actual kids, but okay. But yes, kids.
Some were kids. I mean, I was standing in line to get my SF figure, and there's like four, maybe like 18-year-olds in front of me, and I'm like, yeah, look at you rapscallions. And they were just waxing poetic about Final Wars. And I'm like, yes, this film has found...
Are we that guard now? Are we that, like, are we like the unks in the fandom? Are we like that?
I think second? We are. I think we are. We are the Dios, if you will.
Man.
Yeah.
Feels good.
Yeah.
Feels good.
Yeah.
It feels good to, like, not, because I know there's a certain part of the fandom that holds like 54 to 68 as like sacred. Like, you cannot touch that. And I'm really glad that we're of the generation where it's like, yeah, dude. Evera versus Hedorah, let's go. You know,
yes. Like, yes. No, I mean, look, I was 20 years old when Final Wars came out at that screening. And again, a bright-eyed, you know, full of wonder, young Chris walked into that thing, the biggest Kitamura fan on the face of the planet, worshiped the ground that man walked on at that age. And it was exactly everything that I wanted. And at that time, you know, we were coming off the Millennium films, which were a mixed bag of entries?
You know, when the Millennium stuff came out, I was all in, because this is new Godzilla, right? Mm-hmm. But I haven't seen Kiryu or Tokyo SOS in years. They're not the ones that I put on.
See, me too. Everyone gives me crap. Because I have to, the first Kira movie is probably my least favorite Godzilla movie. It's not that I don't hate it.
Sure.
I don't hate it. But it's one, like, when I watched it, I'm like, oh, there's like a lot of, there was a lot, much like the Millennium and Heisei films, I'm like, you have a lot of really cool ideas here. You just didn't have the budget to pull them off. Like, the idea of, like, building Mechagodzilla around the Godzilla skeleton. You're like, that's a cool idea.
Yeah.
But you didn't do a lot with it. Like, it's a standard procedural Godzilla movie. And then, I mean, and before that we had GMK, which you're like, whoa, you can do something with it. Like, this is a very different feel. So when Final Wars came around, I'm like, this doesn't look like a standard Godzilla movie. This doesn't feel like a standard Godzilla movie. This is a Shonen Jump movie.
Yeah.
That I can't believe that they made. Ooh. There we go. Okay. A little feedback. Weird. Is that me?
Is it?
I don't know. And some feedback here.
positive feedback?
No, like, am I doing something here?
Do you have a pacemaker?
I don't. It's weird. What is that?
Is it me?
It might, maybe? Okay. That's not, okay, went away. So anyway. Yes. So yeah, I'm bummed I'm missing Final Wars. But we're not here to talk about Godzilla. We're here to talk about Shinji Higuchi, who has a fine pedigree as a filmmaker in his own right, outside of doing Shin Godzilla. He has famously done the special effects, directed the special effects for the Holy Trilogy of Gamera. The Holy Trilogy, and I take that in high regards.
Okay.
He was a, I believe, storyboarder on Neon Genesis, worked at Gainax, is close friends with Hideki Anno. But he's also directed a few films in his own right. He directed The Sinking of Japan back in 2006, which was a big-budget movie for Japan at the time.
Yep.
And most famously, outside of Godzilla, he's done the Attack on Titan movies, which yep. I like. Same. I like those movies.
Same.
Yeah. Again, I know anime fans were like, "Why does it look like that?" I'm like, "It's a Japanese movie. It's they don't make $100 million movies. They make $10 million movies because that's what you're going to get."
It's $10 million and like the power of friendship. That's how they make the movies.
It's probably the most apt. Explanation that you can get. So, yes. So, I'm an adamant defender of those Attack on Titan movies. They are not the manga. I get it. But at the time they made them, they were nowhere near being close to finish. So, they kind of had to make their own thing. And even the creators were like, even we were like, not sure where the hell we were going with this story yet. So, when they were like, we're going to do a two-part movie, just kind of do your own thing. Explain to some weebs out here that they're like, well, half the characters are American. I'm like, yeah, but it's a Japanese movie. It's Japanese audience. Are they
supposed to be American?
They're supposed to be white-ish. Like, very European? Somewhat Anglo, yeah. Like Levi right. and his brother are like the only like, Japanese.
He has a brother?
Yeah, Levi's got a brother.
I had no idea.
Yeah. And Mikasa, I believe, is supposed to be Japanese as well. So, but they don't really. They kind of just glance over that. But that's for another thing for another day. Still, makes that movie made me wistful for Higuchi to go to Toho and demand that he make an updated version of War of the Gargantuas. After watching the Armor Titan and Eren Titan fight, I'm like, he 1,000% can do a War of the Gargantuas movie, and I want it to be a violent, like, brawl, like how he did this whole fight sequence, because that's one of my absolute favorite, like, toku moments ever. Like, I sat in theaters watching, I'm like, give this man all the money. Let him do some of the weirder Deep Cuts Toho stuff.
So. I think that if you're going to remake War of the Gargantuas, Toho being Toho, I think they're going to demand that you do Frankenstein Conquers the World first, and then you can do.
I War of the have been,
which is would be interesting.
Look,
like an updated.
I would say this, much like this movie that we're about to talk about, which is a sequel to a nearly 50-year-old movie at this point. Actually, it is
50 years old.
It is a 50-year-old movie. Don't ignore the previous two films. Bring those two films together and give us Frankenstein and the Gargantuas together. Have father versus sons. Go full biblical with it. You know, just beyond the Cain and Abel parable that War of the Gargantuas has. Like, really go deep. You can go nutty with that, but. I digress. We're talking about bullet trains. All right, yes. you've been to Japan.
We've been to Japan.
Train. Yes, we have. I think that's
like on the bingo card on every show that we do. Mention that we've been to Japan.
Rub it into those who have never been.
You know what I mean? Yes. Yeah. So bullet trains are crazy. Bullet trains, like seeing them in person is cool. It's very, have you gone on the, of course you have.
Yeah. I much like a hobo, I rode them, on my last trip. I was on that train probably about a dozen times. Tokyo to Osaka, Osaka to Fukuoka, Yokohama to Tsukugawa. Like, yeah, I was up and down that country on those things.
The way I can describe bullet trains for those who don't know anything about bullet trains or just are unfamiliar with the concept, it's like going from LA to San Francisco in 3 hours, which would normally take an 8 hour drive. Now it takes 3 hours.
Yeah.
So,
and I believe, Osaka and Tokyo are about the distance of LA and San Francisco. I think they're pretty close. Mm-hmm. And I mean, I did that trip back to back twice. Mm-hmm. And I also learned the hard way that, some trains are not like the other, because mm-hmm. I had my buddy waiting for me at the station and I had missed my first train. So I hopped on the next train, because that's what you do. Turns out it was the train that makes every single stop. So that was like a 3.5 hour ride. And the poor guy, shout out to Kazuki, sitting at Osaka station, just like twiddling his thumbs, waiting for my sorry butt to get there. But yeah, no, bullet trains, they're cool. I understand why people have a fascination with them. I understand. It wasn't until I got on them that I didn't understand Japan's fascination with trains. I mean, you've been to Toys R Us in Japan. You've been to Yodobashi.
Yeah.
The model trains and die-cast trains are a gigantic part of their collecting world.
Yes.
Like it's very different than out here where you have some people that are like, "I love steam engines." Like, no.
I think
we like our cars.
I think in Japan it's just more mainstream to do models than it is here. Here it's more of like a, I collect models. You kind of like, all right. But over there it's like, oh yeah, I just do scale models. And it's like, oh yeah, sure. Here's a train from the 70s that's discontinued. You can build mm-hmm. it for Halloween or whatever, or Christmas.
Yeah.
Halloween.
But yeah, no, look, they're great. They are a bit pricey to ride. I'm not talking about the models. I'm talking about the actual train. The trains are awesome. It's kind of like riding in a plane that you don't have to buckle in. They're roomy. It's just, I paid a little over $500 for my ticket for the...
For the pass? Yeah.
Yeah, the pass. Not only that, but there's something I love about standing at the Shinkansen station when the train rolls in. Because there's two ways you can watch it. One, when the train is not stopping at that station and it's like on the third track, mm-hmm. and those sons of bitches blow through there. And I am not kidding. It is literally out of a movie where if you're wearing a hat, you got to hold it, because mm-hmm. just the wind that these things are kicking up is hurricane force.
Mm-hmm.
But what captured my imagination as I was... the first time I hopped on one of these things is as these sleek, and the name is not, it's not being cute. They do look like bullets when they come in because they're aerodynamically designed. Because you got to, if you're going that fast, you got to adjust for wind speed. The conductor hangs his head out the window, pulling in like a boss with his hand, holding onto his hat, hand on the... on the lever, just slightly pulling in, like the efficiency that the Japanese run their trains with is phenomenal. And it's very quaint and old timey.
Yes. Yes. It's very, not theatrical, but it's very like, I don't know exactly old timey. That's just very traditional, I guess. It looks very cool.
It very much is. And so this movie, this came out, what, March?
April, March, May, yeah. Spring.
Yeah. It's a Netflix exclusive. So if you're at home, if you've not watched it, it is on Netflix. I would say maybe pause this episode if you're recording it. Go watch it and then come back so you can listen to Ari and I gush over this thing. real quick, Arian, this is, you know, this is the second mainstream bullet train movie we've gotten in 2 years.
That's true. It's true.
Did you see Brad Pitt's bullet train movie?
I did.
What'd you think of that one?
It was fine. It's fine. It's not like, oh my God, but it's fine.
It's a fun cartoony movie, right?
That's a very good way of putting it. A cartoony, yes. It's colorful.
It's David Leitch.
It's different.
David Leitch, who co-directed the first John Wick and has made.
That's a great way of putting it, actually.
Yeah.
John Wick on a train.
Yeah. I mean, this style of films is bread and butter. I mean, Atomic Blonde, the Fast and Furious spinoff, Deadpool 2. Like, you know what you're going to get with a David Leitch movie. And that's exactly what we got. We got Brad Pitt being Brad Pitt. A lot of weird cameos popping up. And a lot of very cartoonish assassins. You know, again, yeah, very John Wick-y on a bullet train. So,
you know, when I think of that movie, I don't think of Brad Pitt. I think of Aaron Taylor Johnson. And what's his other name? Brian Tyree?
Brian T. Henry.
Yeah, those guys took the movie.
Brian T. Henry kind of steals the show in that with talking about, are you an engine or are you a caboose? You know, doing that whole, you know, soliloquy thing. And his weird, like, kind of fake British accent. I don't actually.
Oh, he's not? British? Is it?
I didn't.
Oh. Hmm.
I thought he's American, but actually, I might be wrong.
Could have pulled me.
So, but this one, though, if you want the bullet train, the authentic bullet train experience, this, you want to sit down and watch this movie because it literally opens. First off, shout out to Higuchi for bringing back the opening title sequence. This is something I miss in films, Arian. I miss a good title sequence. Mission Impossible did it this past summer. Tom Cruise seems to love it because, man, we got the opening title sequence with Top Gun Maverick.
Yeah.
Which brought all the feels. But it is a lost art. We just get like the very Bondish, like if we get like the preamble and then credits. No. He's like, no, we're getting, and he went full anime with it. Like, we're gonna take scenes that you're gonna watch in the next hour and a half to 2 hours. And we're going to sprinkle them in here. Fast cut, bullet train, explosion with the classic Japanese logo.
Love the title card. Love it. Just the logo of it. It looks very. You could put that on a sticker and put it anywhere. It looks great.
1000%. Pure 70s style too.
Yes, that's
an era when quality was not king, but. Style very much was
style, yeah.
So, Arian, like, instead of like our normal, let's not like just give the whole people, let's not break down the movie. Like, I want to kind of just talk about, because there's sequences in this film,
vibes,
characters. So, we're gonna be a little non-linear with this.
Let's start with characters. This movie does not have, it has main characters, it has a protagonist that you follow and an antagonist, but this movie, don't expect too much on character development, because this isn't about single characters. This is about Japan, the people of Japan coming together to fix a problem or to solve a disaster. And that's very, you see that a lot in Higuchi movies. In fact, this movie, I've heard other people talk about it, and they all more or less say the same thing. This has Higuchi's fingerprints all over it. And it doesn't have Anno's, if you're going to compare it to like a Shin Godzilla, it doesn't have his dialogue. It doesn't have his, you know, but the style, you know, everything. There's a sequence that I call it not the explosion, but when the two trains hit each other.
Mm-hmm.
It looks like they took out Kamata-kun from Shin Godzilla and they just put a train over it, because that's exactly what it looks like.
Yeah.
There's a lot. Speaking of characters, there's going to be a lot of people you recognize from Shin Godzilla and Shin Ultraman, and not too much Shin Kamen Rider, but it's like Shin Ultraman is one of the guys who works the JR East Railroad Company.
Mm-hmm.
I looked up the main protagonist. He's from a group called SMAP. Like, remember a boy band from the 90s?
Yeah. Or, and he's been in, he was in Sinking of Japan with Higuchi.
Oh, was he? Okay.
Yeah. And he also had a cameo in the Attack on Titan movies as well.
Okay, so he's a good one.
So he's one of the players, if you will. He's one of the Higuchi players.
I love that they reuse actors. I love that. It's very old Hollywood of them. Or very old Kurosawa, where it's like, oh, that's that guy, and that's that guy. And when you see, like, I love, like, you're watching Seven Samurai and then Godzilla 54 back-to-back, it's like, oh, shit, that's that guy. Love that.
Like, they hopped over from one soundstage to the other. They're just like, all right, what are we shooting this week?
I gotta shave my head. Yeah. I gotta shave my head, so I gotta do this one first and then come over.
Mm-hmm.
Love that. Okay, so this movie has a lot of people that you're gonna recognize. As far as character names, I'm sorry, I'm not. It's Conductor, it's JR.
Our main conductor's name is Kazuya.
Kazuya. And he has another friend. He has another conductor trainee named Fuji?
Yes, it's Fuji. Fuji. It's the rookie.
The rookie.
First day on the job.
Okay. So here we go. The best way I can describe this movie is if you love 90s action movies, if you love disaster movies, this is what you're getting. This movie is Higuchi being a nerd, not on tokusatsu, but on movies like Speed, Executive Decision, Speed 2.
All the classics. Like, I was telling Ari before we started, this is the most Tony Scott movie that Tony Scott never directed.
Yes. Yes.
I mean, you being a child of the 90s like I am, I mean, you grew up on Tony Scott.
Tony Scott and Michael Mann and Ridley Scott. Ridley Scott, obviously, but he's not.
But Ridley, this is the thing. Not to go, quick side tangent. I love Ridley Scott, but I love Tony Scott much more. Tony, like, really made classics. Look, he gave us Alien, gave us Blade Runner, you know. His later output, hit and miss.
Yeah.
Tony was never about that game. He's like, I'm not making, like, epics. I am making grit. I am making basically 70s gritty films in the 80s and 90s. I mean, this is the man that gave us the first Top Gun, but he also gave us a whole, like, the end of his career was everything with Denzel Washington, including a train movie, forgot about Unstoppable, which was his last movie. Actually, he made two train movies. He remade Taking a Pelham 1-2-3.
I was about to say. Yeah. Pretty sure it was not one.
But okay. This is also the man that gave us Days of Thunder and True Romance. Like, the man knew Pulp.
Bangers.
Yes.
Banger movies.
I would argue that Tony Scott's, his filmography is banger after banger in comparison to his brother. His brother's got some misses there.
I'll tell you what.
Mm-hmm.
I agree with you in the same way that people love Julia Roberts, but I'm definitely more of an Eric Roberts guy.
Yes. As far as, like, because Eric Roberts, like, he's giving you what you want.
He's showing up. He's earning every, that guy made $1,000 at that movie and he earned every dollar on that movie.
1,000%.
I'm right there with you. Again, I'm going to gush about this movie. I'm going to gush about the OG one, too.
Mm-hmm.
Have you seen the original Bullet Train?
I've only seen parts. Okay. Unfortunately, I have been unable to track down a copy. I thought Internet Archive had one, but turns out not a full version.
It's been wiped. It's been...
Yeah.
But the original Bullet Train, it's no secret, it inspired a lot of movies. Speed. The ending of Heat, the Robert De Niro and Al Pacino movie, is taken directly from Bullet Train. If you've seen Heat, you should. If you haven't seen Heat, go watch it, because that's another movie that is very, very closely inspired by this movie. I was going somewhere with this. Where was I going?
Heat. 90s movies.
90s movies, this movie is a tribute to all this, even down to the product placement, which we'll get to. I don't want to spoil it.
Yeah. We'll save that for the end.
Okay. So this movie starts. Where do I go from here?
Okay. So it is the classic 90s setup.
Yeah.
After the opening rookie, credits. Okay, sorry.
Yes, you're right. The rookie on the job, his mentor is Obi-Wan, is our main character.
Mm-hmm. And no nonsense.
No.
A man that takes his job seriously.
They ask him point blank, why did you want to be a conductor? Why not a pilot? Why not something? Because he loves his job. He finds satisfaction in getting people to where they need to go.
Like, this
man, this guy.
Aryan, can I tell you something? This is what I kind of love about Japanese cinema versus American cinema. Mm-hmm. American, a lot of them, it's like, you know, like Dave McCracken hates his job until one day, you know, a group of bank robbers. And it's like, you're the janitor and you got to save the day. Like, oh, it turns out you're finding the job that you hate, like you're actually really good at, versus Japanese films and media in general. Like, no, you take pride in your job. Doesn't matter how small or insignificant it is. You are good, and you know that this, in order for the machine to work,
yes,
the cog must be well oiled.
You know this what?
Go ahead.
If you're a, you know, you're not just a janitor. You're a custodial engineer. Mm-hmm. You know, you take pride in your job. And I like
very
that.
Much so.
I like
very
it, much the so. Smallest, even if it's an elevator conductor, or even if you're the guy. Dude, they just made a whole movie about a guy who cleans toilets. Have you seen it?
That's beautiful. The one that got. Yeah, that's the one that got nominated for the Oscar out here, right?
I hope it did. It was Wonderful Days, Beautiful Days.
Yeah.
Something like that. Great movie, and that guy, very much like this conductor, takes his job seriously, and has a whole ritual, you know, he does the and everything. Make sure everything's on time. He has got his watch, his analog watch, by the way.
Yes.
That's super cool.
Which, again, Aryan, I don't know, we've mentioned this to the people. We've been to Japan.
Have we? That's crazy.
I have actually observed this. You know, I'm not trying to speak for the Japanese people as an American who's been over there, just watching the day-to-day life, like watching the said janitor come in, do, you know, clean the bathroom, make sure it's spick and span. Like everybody that was doing their job was very efficient and adamant about their position. Like, and I, you know, of course there's people always want more, but like, here's what I'm doing now. And I will do it to the best that I can. There was no one belly aching. They were like, no, this is what I do. And I will do it good.
Yep. You leave whatever it is you have at home, which is a lot easier said than done. Mm-hmm. You come in and you make sure that you do your single job, whatever job that you have. Even the McDonald's there, everyone is like,
yeah,
the cheese is placed on exactly. You get exactly 50 fries. You get exactly. You know, it's like crazy.
Mm-hmm.
But it's cool. It's very cool. Just like this movie. It's very cool. Yes. I know we're going to be talking. I feel like this whole conversation is just us talking about Japan all over again. I'd be like, yeah, dude, this is great.
Why haven't you gone to Japan? Oh, you should go to Japan. Hey, did you know we've been to Japan?
Hey, have you heard that Chris has been to Japan? That's crazy, dog.
That's what my brother tells everyone now. That's God exactly my brother. Like, hey, did you know Chris went to Japan?
For a month.
So anyway, we have our conductor hero, his trusty young sidekick who's fresh-faced on the job. And then we're introduced to our passengers.
A group of school children.
Mm-hmm.
There's a group of school children. There is a millionaire who's broke or unemployed. Sorry.
Yeah.
And then there's a politician who just got off a scandal. There is
a helicopter pilot.
A sketchy helicopter pilot. Right?
What?
Sketchy helicopter. A disgraced helicopter pilot.
Yes.
And those are the people that you more or less. Am I missing somebody else? I think that's it.
Because we're going to, when we get down to the main. Oh, and, you know, as part of the crew, we have our conductor.
Yes. Yes, yes. UAV conductor. And then later on, we'll meet the people at the JR station who apparently this is a real JR. Like everything here is obviously they didn't blow up a whole Shinkansen.
Yeah.
Obviously they didn't, you know, cause destruction. But apparently, like, they use real bullet trains, real tracks, real stations, which is.
Looks spectacular. Again, as I brought up Top Gun Maverick earlier.
Yeah.
When you're there.
Yes.
And you have the real things. It makes it look so much better. Like Shinji Higuchi does not get the credit I think he deserves for how he shoots his films. Because I say what you will about like Attack on Titan and, you know, they look amazing. They look fantastic. Shin Ultraman, I have argued, might even look a little bit better than Shin Godzilla in many aspects, mainly because Shinji isn't using Anno's 9,000 quick cuts. You know, he lets a scene play out.
Yeah.
But here, he's using the 90s aesthetic of like, yeah, there's the cuts are hard, but they have impact to them. And that camera is in that Shinkansen station, and they got that train going by at like 140 miles an hour, and you're getting the impact on the camera. Like the camera's shaking as the train's going by.
I don't know how they did. They must have done it like on an early Sunday morning when there's nobody at the station or something. Yes. But for them to like close off parts of like the bullet train, it's like, how? You know, how do they do this?
And just for a little, for those who have never been, like the JR is a very real thing.
Mm-hmm.
Like that is, they didn't make up like some agency. Like that's when you go into Tokyo and Osaka and half Japan, it's the Japan Rail. They are the biggest rail company out there in Japan. So the fact that they're like, yeah, you want to make a movie about a terrorist taking over a bullet train? Yeah, we got you, man. Like, what do you need? It's like, I need, you know, give me like 10 days and about 8 trains. And let's go to some stations and you guys turn those things as far as they can go.
Imagine they, the best comparison I can make here is like, imagine if they just shut down the freeway and made a movie on the freeway and used real cars and real buses and just in, I don't know, in New York. No, give me like in LA. That's a great way to.
Yeah.
They just shut down LA freeways and made a movie on the freeway. Like imagine how much chaos and traffic and how crazy that would be. I don't know how they did it, but
absolutely insane. I mean, that's what Speed did, but Speed had at the time, for those not in the LA area, when Speed was being filmed, they were building a freeway called the 105. So that was going to connect LA County, like the beginning of LA County, to LAX. It was going to be the alternate freeway to break up the traffic. So as they were filming, they're like, hey, we have a movie about a bus that can't slow down. We need a long stretch of highway. Oh, we have about 18 miles, 20 miles nearly built, but we're not done. They're like, okay, we know how to end this. We're going to drive that bus off the, you know, the still under construction portion of this freeway.
Crazy. So,
yeah.
I can't think of a better comparison or a closer comparison or a one-to-one. I know in The Matrix Reloaded, they built a freeway in Australia, but that's about, I can't think of any other one.
No. I mean, I'm pretty sure there's others. But yeah, Speed is the best example because they did shoot it out in L.A. That was like, we're there. Like, this is an L.A. movie and we're shooting in L.A. Banger. Yeah.
So this movie, the plot essentially is the JR East company gets a phone call a text message, an anonymous text message from the terrorist.
Mm-hmm.
And they say, hey, there's a bomb on the train. And if it goes below 100 kilometers an hour, can you do the math on that real quick? What's 100 kilometers an hour in American miles per hour? Cheeseburgers per football field?
62 miles.
62 miles. So that's a...
That's hauling ass.
That's essentially the speed limit here on freeways. And just to prove I'm not bluffing, there's going to be another train that has a bomb on it. That if it slows down below this, it'll explode. Sure enough, it explodes.
And it explodes. Again. By the way, 6.5 minutes into this movie at this point.
Something like that, yeah.
Yeah, like week's opening credits, introduced to our hero. We get the, you know, our ancillary characters. Mm-hmm. And then immediately, we're right into it. But that, like, again, much like the efficiency of the real train system, like, you get in, we're at the station for 4.5 minutes, and then we're out, and the second that train leaves, bam, plot. And they're not sitting around, we're not, there's nothing like the
not main, around,
our,
man.
Our hero's not like, ah, oh, my wife's giving me crap, like, none of that stuff, like, no. Straight to the point. Like it should be.
Yes. So they decide, okay, well, this is going to be real. And obviously you don't want to alert the passengers. It gets out, obviously. And then panic happens. Oh my God. I didn't watch this movie. I haven't seen this movie in a while.
Basically the, so now there's, you know, our hero gets word from HQ. Mm-hmm. There's a bomb on the train. Lets the conductor know. And or not the the driver.
Mm-hmm.
And basically said, hey, don't let anybody, you know, no, we
don't freak out. Yeah.
Yeah, don't freak out. But of course, it gets out.
Yes.
Now everyone on the train. There's like 300 people on this mile-long train. But we're kind of focused on two cars at this point.
There's kind of scenes that stick out. There's like this whole bit about these, going back to this millionaire who's unemployed, kind of does some sketchy things and kind of like brings up like, oh, we should have a GoFundMe, a live mm-hmm. GoFundMe to pay off the ransom.
Yeah, which the ransom's like 100 million yen or something.
Something crazy like that.
Yeah.
But there's a specific instruction made by the terrorist that says they need the people of Japan to pay it,
mm-hmm.
not the government.
Yeah.
Right. So he sets up this whole thing. There's a little bit of like, this guy's kind of sketchy. Like, he's probably going to keep the money. It's weird, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then they go off with that. They do, JR East Company decides, like, okay, we're gonna come up with this plan. But in between there, here and there, there are scenes where the train cannot stop. So it's rushing through stations. Again, you get that scene where it collides or hits another car.
Yes. And that's slightly.
Yeah.
Again, this is. Yeah.
It's in a more or less urban area. There's some parts of rural Japan that it goes through, but it's going through cities. It's not like, you know, this is in the middle of the, you know, the country or whatever. No, this is on its way to Tokyo.
Mm-hmm.
So you get to see a lot of the country that way. That being said, because it's in urban areas, there's not a whole lot that they can do. It's not like they can, you know, stop the train, or they have to come up with different ways of slowing down the train, getting the train moving, finding alternate routes. Just like speed, what can we do to keep it going? They come up with this plan with a second car to come up behind it or next to it and transfer people over. So mm-hmm. they figure, okay, well, the bomb's not going to be on all the cars. So let's decouple and then get people off. That happens. For the most part, most of the people get off, right?
Mm-hmm.
Except for our core people that we're following.
Because shenanigans ensue. By the way, so let's set this up for people. The train leaves from Shinomori, which is the northernmost that you can get with the bullet train before mm-hmm. you go to Hokkaido. So this is as far as it goes. So you got like 4.5-5 hours, I think maybe 6, depending on the speed you're going, till you get to Tokyo. And then when you get to Tokyo, because the way the trains work, there's a south to north track, and then there's a north to south track, but they don't connect. It's kind of like they kind of cross. There's two separate mm-hmm. lines, and they all end at Tokyo Station. So they get to Tokyo Station, and this thing still hasn't, you know, been disarmed. It's going to cause chaos because Tokyo Station is the hub.
Yes,
and it'll completely obliterate the transportation of Japan, because that is the beating heart, if you will.
Yeah, it's exactly it. I mean, it's what makes everything goes around. Everything goes through Tokyo Station, and if it doesn't work. I mean, if there's an explosion, it's going to cause mass casualties, you know, destroy. Not the best, right? Just, it's not a good time. No one's going to have a good time.
Yeah. Yeah. It's going to just bring chaos. So, by the way, so at this point, we also have the police in on it.
Yes.
They're investigating it. And this is where this film really shows what it is. And it reveals, hey, this is a direct sequel.
Yes.
To the original film. Because so, early on, they start pulling some files and they're like, this happened before, right? Yeah. This is almost like the 1975 incident. And they're like, is there anybody still around from that? Oh, yes, there is.
Yes.
That's going to play a big part later on.
So but, we find that again, it's been a little while since I've seen this movie, but spoiler alert, one of the people who's left on the train is one of the school children who ends up being the terrorist.
Yes. Now, one of the terrorists.
Why the mastermind, though.
Yeah.
Yes. So there's two terrorists. There's this. Do you have a name? The name of the girl?
Yeah.
It's a girl, by the way.
Yes. So hold on. I have my notes here on my phone.
Thank you for keeping notes.
Great pod, I know. This is her name is oh, crap. It's a problem with I made a ton of notes. This is all going to be edited out.
Okay.
Onodera.
Onodera is a girl's name.
Yes.
Okay, so it's Onodera. We find out that she is one of the people still left on the train, on the remainder of the train.
She gets left behind, like the rest of her classmates who are as. So this whole sequence, which is straight out of Speed.
Yeah.
By the way, Higuchi using model trains to lay out the battle plan, I absolutely love, because he shoots it in such a way, I'm like, I've never seen toys look so dynamic in my entire life. Like, the camera's like hard on these things, and as the people running the JR are explaining to the cops, like, we're going to take a second train, and then we're going to run it up to the back end, and we're going to couple it up, and we're just going to get everyone on to this separate train. That way we can decouple and we can blow up the train with the bombs on it, because the bullet train is like 15 cars long.
Something like that.
Yeah. So we'll get everyone on the train that doesn't have a bomb, and then we can decouple. And as we get enough space, then we can just, as it slows down, either nature will take its course and it'll explode, or we can derail it and prevent it, hopefully in a slightly less populated area, and problem solved.
But because this is a 90s disaster movie,
yes,
there's you know, it's not a smooth ride. There's damage to the back of the train, so not everybody can get off at the same time. Nope. So they have to decouple it. Fuji, the assistant, gets injured in the process. And is essentially out for most of the movie. He's impaled, right?
Yes, he gets he gets impaled in the initial. So what happens is, so there's a sequence. So they realize, hey, we have to manually decouple this section of the train, because there'll be a secondary line that will connect. So we can send this train, the non-bomb train, to couple up with it, but we don't have any engineers that know how to do this stuff. But there is one. There's an old man on the train who, browbeaten, stands up and says, I can do it. I know how to do this. And he gets his moment. They're like, well, you need the tools. The tools are not on the train. So there's this whole Speed-esque sequence where they're running another bullet train against our main bullet train, and they shoot a grappling hook over into
amazing, amazing,
sending tools over and another dude to help this guy out.
By the way, we don't know who this guy. He just shows up in the middle of the movie, and that's kind of the whole part of the movie where it's like
he's just a passenger on
the train.
He's
just a guy. He does his job, gets people off, and moves on.
So, but it's this sequence where everyone's getting on. So the plan essentially works. So they decouple the back end of the train. They get the new train to couple up and they start getting everyone off. But the majority, we don't know the bad guy is on the train. So she's watching all this go down. So there's plans afoot. There were plans with plans.
Okay. So, you're going to have to remind me how they figure this out. But the cops get involved and they find out that this, I don't know, remember if they find out she is the sole, she's not the sole terrorist on this.
But, no, because they're going from the bombs. They find one of the bombs on the train.
Okay, so then they link that bomb to this other dude, this construction worker, this.
Yes.
Right.
Who
ends up. Who we find out is the son of one of the original terrorists.
Yes.
In the in Bullet Train.
Yes.
But spoiler or twist is our terrorist, Onodera, right?
Yes.
Is the daughter of one of the cops who shot the original terrorist.
Yes.
But
didn't kill him, though.
Didn't kill, because that's a cover-up by the Japanese government.
Mm-hmm.
Originally, the terrorist blew himself up. He had a vest or something, but obviously they're gonna give the glory to this hero cop who didn't really do anything because of his fame and you know all this good stuff. He ends up being a horrible father to Onodera, this girl. So,
and by the way, we have to preface it this Onodera, she's like 16, 17 years old.
Right.
She might be a little older, but she's definitely in the high school.
Mm-hmm.
She's with that class. This dude who is, again, 1975 is when all this went down. So, you know, he maybe a rookie when the original incident went down. The dude is pushing 70 at this point. So you have this. This is the only time I really question anything. I'm like, this old MF-er has a 16-year-old daughter?
It is what it is, man. It is what it is.
When, you know, but yeah, it turns out, you know, the life of fame, of unearned glory, did a number on his psyche, and he kind of became an alcoholic and was kind of a piece of crap to his daughter. So she knows the whole thing. Like the son, the bomb maker,
the original terrorist, yes.
You know, she approached him. And he's like, hey, I'm down with this. Let's, you know, because at the end of the day, we find out that the plot wasn't about the money. Even though the bomb maker's like, yeah, I could use a couple extra shekels, but I doubt we're going to get it. It was about making a point, sending a message, if you will.
Yes.
That, guess what? Our government was not, they were not forward with us. And thus, the world must know. So this girl's been harboring a grudge against her father, and vicariously through that, a grudge against the train system and the JR, the good people at the Japan Rail. And that's what
it's
this
a bit
is
much.
All
it's a bit much, but this is the story. This is the story we're going with.
Yep.
A bit much, but it is what it is.
Mm-hmm.
So they track down the bomb maker, who is a construction worker, who is a blaster, funny enough.
Yeah.
And they bring him in for questioning, all this fun stuff. Eventually he does he own up to it? I think he does.
He does. And he's kind of like, hey, like he's actually very straightforward right away. Because I believe he knew like, oh yeah, you know, I was going to probably get caught. So yeah. And the cops think they have the guy. And then they realize, wait, you're not the guy. I mean, you're an accomplice.
You're the guy. Yeah.
Yeah. But he's like, yeah, I made the bombs, but I'm not the one that organized this whole plan. He's like, do you even think I have the wherewithal to, or it's like, no, I'm a bomb maker like my father before me. So they're like, well, then who the hell is it? And that's when we, the one of the few scenes not on the train is with Onodera's father, who is basically living in his own squalor.
Yeah.
And there's a moment where she calls him, and this is where we get the reveal, because she's at the back of the train quietly mocking him, telling him what a piece of crap he was. And he's like, hey, you know what? Yeah. And then he has a moment where he's like, yeah, you know what? I was a crappy father. Hey, I'm sorry. You know what? I kind of maybe deserve your ire. And she's like, yeah, you do. And then just like the scene out of Speed, uses his phone, blows his ass up.
Crazy.
Kills him. Crazy. She gets her revenge against her father. And now that she's done it, then she reveals to the rest of the crew, who, by the way, at this point, there was an incident in decoupling the train because there was a bomb they didn't know about. And the bomb went off as they decoupled. So 90% of the innocent bystanders get off the train, but we're left with our motley crew of passengers and personnel on the train, including our poor driver, this sweet girl who is white knuckling the whole time.
Yes.
Managing to maintain speed because you're not in a straight line. You have turns. You have pivots. You have to avoid other trains that are on the track because you're ahead of schedule. And she is doing everything in her power to maintain, because once the bomb goes off in the back, like, it throws everything into chaos. And she is like trying to hit the auxiliary power, all this stuff, and she's just has her hand on that throttle the whole time, slightly going up and down, maintaining that speed. And every time our hero comes in, it's like, how are you doing? She's like, I'm doing my best, sir. I will make sure that, like, this train does not slow down. And there are times when he's telling her, like, you got to slow it down. And she's like, you get that? Again, it's so 90s and it's so perfect. Like, just like hard camera on the speedometer as it drops, just like kilometer by kilometer. It goes down. And just the hand, like, her sweaty brow and the hand on the, and just slightly moving it up. Like, it's the most mundane thing, but it's what action movies do best.
It's great. It's, again, we're gushing over this because this is.
So at this point, we, you know, Onodera reveals to the crew because, okay, so the bomb goes off. This is where our plucky rookie gets injured and was in this explosion. So now everyone's cut off. So now you have like 9-10 people left on the train. And this is after a bit of chaos, a panic, and people freaking out. You know, the whole thing with the tech billionaire.
When he has to kill me, go ahead.
So now they're left with the conundrum, and our main hero will not allow this to happen. He pleads to her humanity. He's like, come on, you can't do this. While all this is going on, the Japanese government is like, hey, this thing is getting a little too close to comfort to Tokyo Station. So doesn't matter who's left on board.
There's also, you know, go ahead.
Yeah. Doesn't matter who's left on board. You will derail this train it's like two stops before Tokyo Station. Like, it's going to be in a semi-popular, we've evacuated that area. That's where you're going to do it. The JR people are like, we can't do that. We can't destroy this train. There's still people on board. But there's still hope. They figure out they're going to try one more go at something. So they build a barrier to slow the train down. And our hero comes up with a plan. He's like, look, we know that the bomb, there's 7 cars left. There's only 3 bombs left, and they're on trains 1, 3, and 4. So we go into train 7 and 8. What we could do is we could decouple that. The momentum will give us enough room. Let the train hit this barrier, blow up the engine, and then we should be able to ride out the the chaos, if you will. We, you know, it's going to be bumpy. It's going to be risky, but this is our best hope of saving everyone's life on this train.
And there is like, a subplot of them trying to connect two different rail station or not railroads from a different company.
Yeah.
That's, again, it's like Japan comes together and they try to solve this problem. And that goes on. Like you think like, oh, this is how they're going to solve the problem. Halfway through that, the Japanese government comes in and says, no, you cannot do that. And it's going to end at this station. And then you're going to, you know, it is what it is. So there's a point of acceptance that they're, you know, it's not going to work out.
Yeah. There's going to be acceptable losses here.
Unfortunately. But
yes. And by the way, because we're running out of time, our plucky young sidekick is bleeding out.
Yes.
Everyone's at their wit's end. Like they literally have a Kobayashi Maru here. It's like, how do you win an unwinnable situation? Well, everyone agrees like, hey, this is the only way. Some of us might not live, but there's a chance. Do you want to risk it? And this is, again, what I love about the Japanese. Like, they kind of take a vote. They're like, this is the plan. Are you all on? Are we, is there any, and everyone went, yeah. It, you know, take the risk of living versus the inevitability of dying. So, there's this whole setup at this station, putting ton, like, water barrels. There's a whole, like, kind of like just a big barrier to stop the train and absorb what is going to be an explosion because there's still bombs on this train. Everyone gets to the back. They take every piece of luggage that is left on the eight cars, throw it in the back as any sort of cushioning because they know what's going to happen. Physics is going to, you know, come into play here. They decouple the train. The engine and the four main cars go ahead. Everyone is in the back for this train, the train car. The engine runs forward into this barricade. By the way, when you look at it, it's spectacular. This car, the engine goes through these three or four like water barriers to kind of slow it down.
Yeah.
Runs into the barrier, explodes in a magnificent fashion. And then you have the two last cars who are still going at about 65 miles an hour. And the car in front of them, obviously, the train derails. And they use the car that's in front of them as a means because they figured, like, hey, this thing's going to come up first. So this will slow down this last car. Like, they're just plotting out physics. They're like, theoretically, we should remain somewhat safe. This thing should slow us down in time to not run into the explosion and hopefully not kill us all. But it's still absolute chaos. Car derails. Everyone's flying around, you know. But the car that our plucky, you know, young cast is in comes to a full stop. Everyone climbs out. You know, no one else has died. Are here, you know. And by the way, there's a great moment when our conductor goes up to the driver and he's like, "You've done a great job. Put it on autopilot and let's go." And there's that moment where he takes her hand off of the off of the lever, and she does. It's again the most Japanese thing. She almost does like a goodbye to the train, her train that she loves operating. And they run to the back. Like, again, it's such a beautiful action moment. This whole sequence, I'm sitting here watching this movie, and I'm like, how in the hell did you guys do this? And then Netflix, like, a week later put, like, a making of. It being Shinji Higuchi. And Shinji Higuchi, first and foremost, is a special effects man. I don't think that's any secret. Aryan, do you know how he did the sequence?
Model trains, right?
Model freaking trains. And he shot it so beautifully. I could not tell the damn difference. This is where I'm like, okay, we need models back in movies big time.
Yeah.
Look, I said this when I rewatched the 98 Godzilla movie. Say what you will about that film, but the action sequences in that movie do hold up. And there's a sequence, and when I watched it at G-Fest, when the missiles miss Godzilla and they hit the Empire State Building or the Chrysler Building, and the top of the building falls, and it's in that slow motion. That was a model, and it looks spectacular. There's something that you can't get with CG buildings crumbling and destruction like that, that you can only get with like models.
We are going to be dating ourselves. We're going to be whatever. There's going to be a generation of people who have never seen Independence Day.
Mm-hmm.
And they've never seen an alien spaceship blow up the White House.
Oh.
That's done all by practical. And I think the peak of practical effects is that.
Yes. 1,000%. That was the teaser trailer. You remember that teaser trailer, right?
Everybody does. Yeah.
That's the saucer. That's the beam coming down, and that is the model, like the 1/8 scale model of the White House blowing up in slow motion, and it looks spectacular. Even in Armageddon, a lot of the destruction was done practically. Like that whole sequence when the meteor hits Paris, and you get that beautiful shockwave. Like that, when I saw that movie when I was like 13, or yeah, it was like 13, 14. That sequence stood out, and they're like, how in the hell did you do that? And they went out to the desert, shot the plate of the explosion, and then overlapped it with a model. Beautiful. Absolutely beautiful. And Higuchi's like, hey, you know what? We could do this with CG, but it's not going to look right. I'm going to get a miniature car, some miniature trains. We're going to build a replica of the set. And we're going to shoot it at at high speed and then slow it down, because that's how you get those beautiful moments. And I'm just going to light it to a point you can't tell the damn difference. And I swear to God, there was a point where I'm like, I'm like, did you really derail a train? Did you pull a Christopher Nolan with this stuff? No, just sitting in a warehouse somewhere, probably outside Tokyo, and blowing up a train. And probably at like 1 a.m. and probably Higuchi's like, this is my favorite thing to do. God, it's I love amazing. This movie.
Man, God, this is great. This is, again, we're gushing over this because it's things that we love.
Yes.
Yeah. It's practical effects. It's Shinji Higuchi being a nerd.
Yeah.
It's 90s movies. What else do you want?
Aryan, this movie wraps up, right? So the train derailment, everyone gets out. Our hero and the operator check on their plucky young coworker who's going to pull through. He's going to pull through. He lost a lot of blood, but he's going to pull through. And they walk away. What did they go get?
They didn't go get anything. She comes off screen and says, "You done a good job." Hands her a bag of McDonald's. And at that point, I stood up and...
And am I being facetious at all when they're like, here's McDonald's. All right. Credits.
Curtains. It's over. That's it.
That's how you do it. No overstaying your welcome.
Nope. No 10 years later. No.
Nope.
None of that.
Nope. Nothing. No follow up. No, like, you know, hey, you know, this girl's going to do, 20 to life for this whole terrorist plot. Like, none of it.
Nope.
Credits. McDonald's. Like, hey, guess what? We all work together.
Let's go get McDonald's.
Let's go to McDonald's. Everyone lived. There were redemptions. There were explosions. That's it. You had a ride. You had a 2-hour and 17-minute ride. By the way, this movie doesn't really feel 2 hours and 17 minutes, does it?
Does it? Was it 2 hours? Wow. It
felt like 2 hours and 17 minutes. Yeah. With full credits, by the way. So,
wow.
I'll say this. The first hour of this movie is nonstop. Like, it does not let up. It doesn't let up in the way that Shin Godzilla doesn't let up with the talking. You know, how Anno structured that movie. Like, it's like an Aaron Sorkin movie. Like, talking. But the way he cuts it, like, everyone just says their line, their dialogue to the camera, and then cuts. So it's always moving. where Higuchi is like, no, I'm not a big dialogue guy. We're moving action, action, action. And you're cutting between the JR station, the police, and what's going on in the train. And at no point are you ever lost at what's going on. Like, he has like four or five grand sequences. And then about after the decoupling, when we have to actually kind of move the plot along a little bit, like, okay, what's this all about? Why, who's doing this and everything? I would say this is the only low point for me in the movie, is like, we have to get all this stuff out of the way. So there's like a good 30 minutes where like, there's no action going on. We have plot development. And then we get to the final maybe 40 minutes where all of this takes place. The whole plot, everything, like the government's not going to help. You know, let's derail the hell of the train and let's ride it out.
I don't think we talked enough about the JR East characters. Mm-hmm. One of them obviously being, if you watch these movies, you know Shin Ultraman. It's the main character. It's Shin Ultraman.
Yeah.
But a lot of what they do, a lot of the action comes through them, and they're in coordination with the conductor and Fuji and everything. And it's kind of there's no one hero character. There are a lot of hero characters, and they all come together to fix this problem. Get McDonald's.
Again,
this was, get over that.
Yeah. This was something like I was, for those who are listening and maybe watching, before we sat down, I was telling Ari, I'm like, again, I love this staple because last summer I finally watched Gal Geiger all the way through. King of the Braves, Gal Geiger, one of the best Braves, the anime, yes. And that has a robust cast of characters. You know, it is a mech show, but it's a bureaucratic mech show where the bureaucracy works. Like, it really shows, like, everyone in that group that operates this giant robot has a specific job to do, and they all do it well, and they're all very adamant that they do their best, because if one person fails, the whole operation of fighting giant monsters and saving the planet could absolutely fall apart at any given time. And that show really focuses on that. They're like, it doesn't matter how minor the character, they all play their role, and they all play their role to the best of their ability. There's no proverbial heel turn. No one is like, when is it going to be my time? Like, no, they're like, I push the button to launch the mechs. I push, you know, I do the, like, I am, you know, I'm the guy coordinating with the pilot. Like, that's all that stuff. Like, everything works and everyone does their job and they're very good at it. That's what this movie really hammers down. And I love it to death. There's an optimism to this movie that you don't really see in films anymore. Like, I kind of want that optimism to be brought back. Like, our heroes are the heroes. Our villains are the villains. You know, our villain is, you know, she's doing terrible things, but it's for petty revenge. It's, you know, but she has a, you know, a reason for doing what she's doing. And she's not, like, purely evil. But, you know, I sometimes just kind of want an evil bad guy back. I want a Hans Gruber here and there. Because that's, you're watching, you're escaping into cinema, and you need those kind of things every once down then.
This is a fun ride.
Absolutely. I am
fun ride.
Look, I have bemoaned this streaming era because there was a point where I thought, man, we could see some great stuff because now you're not beholden to box office. Like, you can really do some experimental stuff. That was my hope. Maybe about 8 years ago, 9 years ago, when streaming was really starting to build up, that has not come to fruition for me. Like, streaming, I think the flower is off the rose, if you will. Mm-hmm. And, you know, there's a lot of money being dumped into certain projects, which to this day, I'm still like, I don't know how you guys are going to make your money back on this when you're charging $14.99 a month. That you can watch over and over again. Like, some of the stuff is big budget. This is like a mid-budget action movie that would have been out in the 90s. That would have been like $40 million. I think it's maybe a $9 million movie from Japan, maybe seven. So, you know, Netflix is like, yeah, we'll pay for that if you can give us this. But every once in a while, we get something like a Bullet Train where I'm like, yeah, this was released here in the States. It probably would have gone on, you know, under the radar, and it would have been something on deep cable that people would have discovered.
Yeah.
But Netflix is like, no, you know what? We like Japanese cinema. We want to work with Higuchi. He wants to make this Bullet Train movie. Yeah, let's give him like $8 million. And, you know, that could turn things around. Now, you know, was it a big hit? I don't know. I looked. I couldn't find anything. That's the problem with streaming. They don't release numbers.
You know where it is a big hit? Right here.
Yes. Yes. Right there. Oh, but I'm so happy this thing exists. And I'm hoping that anybody's watching this really sits down to it. Look, if you love tokusatsu, like, this is kind of what the show is. It's tokusatsu adjacent, you know, a lot of stuff. And that's kind of what this is. Like, this is a old school action movie, a very 90s action movie with elements of it, because you're using them. There's a lot of miniature work in here that I didn't realize was going on.
Again, and I don't know if we've talked about how much we love everything going on in this. The only thing this movie doesn't have is a giant monster running around or some crazy experimental, you know, dude.
Yeah.
But everything here checks off all of our boxes. If it checks off our boxes, it's going to check off your boxes too. So,
if you love action movies, this is up your alley. Like, this is a great old school, and I hate the fact that a 90s movie is now old school, but you know, we are 30 years out. So I know, checking the old pulse there.
They shaved me the other day. I had a gray hair. I was growing gray hairs. I'm like,
you got a gray hair.
Yeah.
No, I've gone completely, mostly gray since I was 35.
You're going full Reed Richards now.
I am. Oh, time. She's a fickle mistress. But yeah,
thanks for coming to Unk Talk.
Yeah, basically. So do whatever you can. Go log on to Netflix. Go watch this, because this is such a beautiful movie. It will probably be in my top five of the year.
Oh, yeah.
1,000%.
Sleeper hit of the year. Yeah.
1,000%. There's a few movies left that I'm really waiting to see. The two that are on the top of my list right now are Guillermo del Toro's Frankenstein.
Yep. Also on Netflix.
But it's actually getting a theatrical release, too.
Oh, good.
Yeah. And Smashing Machine. Being an MMA fan, like an old school MMA fan, like that movie, I'm like, ooh, this has potential to really be something. So those are like the two movies that like are kind of left. And like anything that comes out in between there, like, cool, that might be gravy, but thus far, this is easily one of my favorite movies of the year. This and Havoc came out around the same time, which was Gareth Evans, the man who did The Raid. I really loved Havoc. It's that you want to talk about. So if Bullet Train is a 90s action movie, Havoc is kind of an updated 70s crime drama. And Evans has talked about, like, he worships the ground that, like, Jun Fukuda walks on.
Oh, really? That's funny.
Oh, yeah. In fact, his next movie, he's remaking a Jun Fukuda Yakuza film. So,
is it Battle Without the Yakuza Papers? Or
let me see here. What was it? Gareth? He is... A Cult Is My Passport.
Okay, I haven't seen that one.
Yeah, so it's kind of a more of a deep cuts one. But I've listened to this man talk, and yeah, the man loves Asian cinema. He loves Hong Kong. He loves Japanese cinema. I mean, if you watch The Raid 2, like, he got, who was the controller of Planet X?
I know who you're talking about. From Final Wars?
Kazuki Kitamura? No.
Not Taksakaguchi.
No. I'll tell you right now.
Neko Samurai, right? That guy.
Yes. It was... Kazuki Kitamura. He was the Yakuza boss in The Raid 2. Which, I love The Raid 2, but I don't love it as much as The Raid 1. Raid 2 is very much his godfather to, you know, his heat, if you will. So, I just love that, you know, got, you know, people are making these movies and it's getting like some newer film buffs going like, oh, hey, maybe we should go back and revisit some of these things, because there's a lot of great cinema that's buried out there that a lot of people have never watched. And that's why we do this podcast.
Yes.
Because you and I love this stuff.
I was looking up other people talk about this movie, and there's really not a whole lot.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of people talking or showing clips of Bullet Train, but not or of Bullet Trains, actually. Mm-hmm. But not a whole lot of people talk about this movie. So
yeah. Hopefully, which is a damn shame.
Yeah.
This hopefully is a fantastic movie.
This is a great movie.
Sleeper hit of the year. I don't know. I can't. When was the last time we gushed this hard over a movie?
Gush this hard?
Yeah.
Probably either Rats or Seventh Curse.
I still love that you went. I can't believe you never watched that movie. And when I introduced it to you, like, you just went apeshit over it.
It was, man.
It's amazing, isn't it?
Yes, it's.
It's everything you want. It is a kitchen sink movie. It is Evil Dead. So if you're listening to this, you're like, what the hell are they talking about?
Go
back to our archives and find our review of The Seventh Curse. And then 88 Films and I think Vinegar Syndrome released their version out here on Blu-ray, which I have sitting right there ready to watch again. Do watch that movie. It is bonkers. It's Indiana Jones meets Evil Dead. That's the best way I can describe that.
That's a great way of putting it.
Yeah. So.
Yeah.
Let's wrap this up.
Yep.
We're pushing about 90 minutes. Arian, I think by the time we get to our next episode, you're a baseball fan, right?
Huge baseball fan.
And remind the people, who's your team?
Padres.
San Diego boy.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm proposing for the playoff season, which is next month.
Yes.
Should we do Battlefield Baseball?
Yes.
All right.
Yes. Done. Done.
So, yes. Yeah. So, tune in. Tune in to our next episode. We're going to watch Battlefield Baseball. Maybe, do we, I don't know, do we do that with maybe a doubleheader of Deadball? Or do we just do Battlefield? Deadball, the spiritual sequel.
Let's do Battlefield Baseball.
Battlefield
Baseball. And then, cause, you know, we can do one thing at a time.
Okay.
By the time, we'll probably get into, like, Unnecessary Roughness from the 90s. At this point, we're going to watch Little Giants with Rick Moranis as Ed.
Excuse me. How about one of the greatest baseball movies of all time, Rookie of the Year?
Oh, buddy. That's a weird way of saying Major League.
Look, just a real quick thing. I did a podcast one time with our old horror writer from my old site. And he called, I went over to his place in suburb of LA. And so I showed up. They're in the middle. He's like, come on in. It's a condo.
Mm-hmm.
I roll in. There's a group of people sitting there. So there's, you know, he took one of his guest rooms and turned it into a podcast studio. And I'm looking at him like, who the hell are these people? So he's like, dude, sit down. We're in the middle of a break. So I sit down. I'm sitting next to this dude. I'm like, I know you. But where do I know you from? So they're promoting this new horror film. And someone cracks a joke about American Pie. And it hits me. I'm like, oh, my God, you're Rookie of the Year. The dude from American Pie.
Yeah.
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 I stopped. I literally kind of like, I turned to him like, as they're recording this thing, I'm like, holy shit, you're Rookie of the Year. And his buddies start bursting out laughing. And the dude looks at me, he's like, yeah, I am. And I'm like, I give him a little bow. I'm like, I love that movie as a kid. It's awesome. Thank you. He's like, no one ever brings that thing up. I'm like,
really?
Because you don't talk to the right people.
Okay.
It's all about the funky butt loving. If you know what I'm talking about, you know what I'm talking about. All right.
All right, buddy.
All right, let's wrap this up. Remember, if you're listening to this at home, you can check out our main show, The Kaiju Kingdom Podcast, at thekaijukingdompodcast.com, or You can stream us on all of your favorite podcast streaming sites like Apple, Spotify, or wherever else you might find better podcasts. We're also on social media. We're on X. We're on Instagram. That's at the Kaiju Kingdom. We're also on Facebook.com. That's Facebook.com/the Kaiju Kingdom podcast. And if you're watching this on our YouTube channel, maybe give us a little like, a little subscribe. You know, keep those numbers up. That's how you support us.
Thank you.
And with that, that will wrap up this edition of Common Kaisers. For myself and
Ariane.
Thanks for watching, guys.
Have a great weekend. If you're watching this on the weekend, have a great rest of your day. If you're watching that, go to bed.